Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Despite what their moms told them, they just aren't talented enough for radio. Unfortunately, anyone can have a show these days. Sean.
Well, I'm pretty hard to figure out sometimes. In fact, I can't even figure myself out sometimes, so don't you try to.
Joe.
You're an idiot. And really, a disloyal person.
This is the Cuse Militia. Those two unapologetically biased orange-blooded homers, Sean and Joe.
It's the most bullshit thing I've seen in 30 years.
Welcome, orange men and ladies. Happy Sunday. This is the Cuse Militia with Sean and Joe. At Cuse Militia on the socials. Go there, join the militia. Syracuse breaks a three-game losing streak with a quad three win over Boston College. They improved to 14-10, 7-6 in the ACC. And as chances begin to dwindle down, the Orange are 0-5 in quad 1 and 1-3 in quad 2 wins so far for the year. At this point, you'll hear from us and we'll hear from you in fan feedback. It's good to be back, on the heels of a win, too. It would be much worse to sit on the sidelines while I was away with some wins in there, some big wins, and instead we dealt with losses. I'd much rather have the wins, but anyway, I was on a work trip in Orlando, and the more I thought about it, the more I thought, man, maybe we didn't tell them live that we were going to miss these two shows, because we did speak about it. And the more I thought about it, the more I think it was in the green room after a show. So with that said,
that makes sense.
Otherwise, we would have definitely been on top of that. But I got a lot of DMs and things like that.
My brother texted me and he asked if we were done with the show. So, yeah.
No. Despite what people might want to think or might want to happen, we're not done with the show. Unfortunately, for those people, we're still around. And that's too bad. No one's forcing anybody to listen. No one's forcing you to read my tweets on Twitter, too, but people still do that. So anyways, I was in Orlando on a work trip, and I brought everything with me, but the schedule there was just too packed to overcome and be able to put together any kind of show. And I totally missed every dribble of the UVA game, which I went back and watched the condensed version of, and I liked what I saw. Unfortunate on the loss. Looks like things kind of, you know, the condensed version doesn't do a game justice, I don't feel like. So I'm not sure if I got the whole gist of that. I didn't read anything about it, but kind of looked like they just had some small issues down the stretch. And we know what happened with Virginia Tech. I saw our boy Giovanni Heater on Q Sports Talk Radio with a couple of guys, I think, gosh, I don't remember who they were now off the top of my head, and I apologize, but he was on that show, and he talked about Hunter Couture. We talked about Hunter Couture. That team's just, the dynamic with him in there is completely different. They go on, you know, they beat Duke, they beat us, they beat UVA last night. So, I mean, no shame in that game. They're playing high caliber basketball right now. UVA, obviously. Kind of goes without saying, we were lucky to be in that game, much like the game against UNC, despite the fact that they're not even, UNC that is, not even being ranked. But some close games, and the fan base will still implode on itself and break out in civil war. Jim Boeheim said some things that I thought were pretty normal. and all of a sudden, everybody's listening to press conferences or something, or was that actually the straw that broke the camel's back? I don't know, but you know, I don't understand why there's some who just love the drama of creating issues out of nothing. And I think it probably happens once a year. And, you know, if you've listened to this show for a long time, we've played coaches pressers for, it's going on 7 seasons now. Okay. I don't think we used to do them every episode, but it's been quite some time. We've been doing them every episode. I put in those montages on purpose, the snark, every time there is some. So if you listen to the show, you know that the snark always happens. Okay. It is no secret. It's been since I was a kid that Jim Boeheim and Syracuse Sports Media have a contentious relationship. These things are not new. So why is there controversy now? I don't know. I wasn't really around. I didn't read much about it. I did go back and listen to it. But other than that, I don't understand the controversy. He's been way ruder in the past. If you really want to gauge it, he's been worse. Yeah. So I don't know, Joe. You know,
but he had this interview with Pete Thamel as well.
I saw that
just last night, and he's getting obliterated as well.
Yeah, so he put his foot in his mouth talking about how Pitt and Wake Forest bought teams. Okay, I think he in the article or later on it was corrected. He did come out and say that he misspoke. Probably not the best thing to say. And by the way, I'm no Jim Boeheim bootlicker. I've given him plenty of criticism, especially this year, but to cling on to the things that you know he's going to, you know, the things that you expect from a press conference is one thing. And, you know, whether or not you want to agree with the way he handled the question on Benny, I think it was rude. Okay. But we're making a mountain out of a molehill with that. I think, you know, the Pete Thamel thing that just happened recently. I think Coach is just frustrated. He mentioned in that article, he mentioned the Pete Thamel about, this is why, you know, Jay Wright's gone. This is why Coach Krzyzewski's gone. It's a circus now. And it's too much to keep up with. And for all of those who are waiting for him to retire, I wouldn't bet it's too long before he gets fed up with it too. And we'll see what happens at the end of this year. And go from there. But, you know, I don't know what he meant when he said he misspoke, because, I mean, I mentioned on this show that, you know, Pitt put together a super team out of the portal. I don't know about any money or anything like that as far as buying teams, but it's obvious what they did, and they did a good job. And that's all legal and above the fray now. And that's okay. But it's going to be tough to compete like that all the time, to put together super teams, you know, to contend every year. So look, it's the whole thing's really fluid. I think we're on a path. I think the NCAA in general is on a path to destruction in some way. So I'd agree with him when he says, you know, we're not in a good place with college basketball. I really do agree with that. I don't see how it's great, especially for a school like Syracuse.
Right, so. And it comes down to, there's always unintended consequences to certain things, and it hasn't even been around long enough to even go through a cycle of, you know, a 4 to 5 year, you know, player cycle to see how this is really going to have an effect. Because realistically, if you look at it, and there's all these transfers and all these people from other schools, those transfers are taking up normal, like, scholarships. Positions and stuff, right? Yeah. So now you're talking that you're going to have players that are normally good enough to go to some of these bigger Division I schools, now they're not going to have a spot. So now some of these better players are just going to trickle down to some of these mid-major schools, and that might make them more competitive. Or that's just going to be the cycle, because then you're going to have these four-star guys that are going to mid-major schools that after 2 years then get the transfer portal, the 1 year to, you know, yeah, you proved yourself, so now you're worthy enough to come play, you know. So we still don't know where that's going to land. But right now, it definitely is almost like free agency.
Yeah.
And Jim Boeheim probably shouldn't have used specific teams' names, especially if he didn't know. But at the end of the day, you could have still made the comment without using specific team names, because you know what's happening. Teams are going out and they're getting better players and better teams, and older, more experienced teams. because they have that type of stuff to give away.
Yeah, and, you know, I totally agree with that. And maybe, I guess the Wake Forest coach came out and said, well, that's absolutely false, you know. We can split hairs, too, with how they determine it as well. But with that said, we all know what's going on. And while I think, you know, that was a foot-in-the-mouth moment, no doubt, especially on the heels of some of the other things, was two press conferences in a row, I think, where, you know, he got criticized for not addressing a question from a student properly. Apparently that was a big deal. And then, you know, the one again after the UVA game, which I have, and we can play it if we want. And he kind of corrected that with Polly and Steve on, again, Q Sports Talk Radio or Q Sports Talk Show or whatever it is, which is actually, that's a decent follow on. It's all of the people you would expect. Brian Higgins and I think Brent Axe is on there. That's where On the Block is from. And then some other guys. But anyway, he was on there and kind of cleared that situation up. And he just came out and said it. He was like, look, you know, I'm not in the best of moods after a loss, you know, especially he said 4 in a row, but he meant 3 in a row, 4 out of the last 5, I guess. And you can only imagine being in his position for as long as he has to keep to have more of a filter. I think the longer you do it, the less of a filter you have, and there's going to be foot in the mouth moments. And I don't always agree with it. And it comes across rude, and it is rude in some situations, but it's entertaining nonetheless for me. I mean, I'm fine with it. I mean, I get it. It's been like that forever. Since I can remember, since long before I really even thought about doing a podcast, for crying out loud, this is nothing new. So anyway, all right.
Yeah, no, I mean, he should have never said, the Benny Williams thing was like a miscommunication. And that's the one thing that I hate about that more than anything is come out and say something, you know, just don't say, oh, Benny Williams isn't here and Coach Boeheim will address it after. Like, if we know what the deal is, and then that should have been addressed, because I'm like I said, they announced it over the TV when we were talking when the game started and made it sound like there was something going on. They didn't say anything about personal reasons, and then all game there's people speculating on Twitter and killing Benny because, oh, you know, he's transferring, oh, you know, that Malik Brown took his starting job. Like, there's people killing him. And then they go out there, and then Jim Boeheim, who's assuming that everybody knows that he just wasn't there for personal reasons, gets to the press conference, and this student asks him the question, and he's like, that's your question? Like, because he assumed, he didn't know that people didn't know what was going on. And I don't think he really understood how it came across the TV to everybody that was watching. So, overall, just a miscommunication. Like I said, it's dumb that they're still talking about.
It's dumb that, yeah, it's still a thing, and it's increasingly stupid. It's almost like just trying to frustrate the guy to the point where he's like, you know what, I'm done with this. I'm out of here. Like, you know, okay, you know, it's how it feels to me. And I don't know, you know, the Pete Thamel article, I can only guess who the radio host is, because I'm not there. And so I don't listen to, and I know I can listen on the app, but I don't listen to sports talk radio. I don't listen to, really, I listen to certain podcasts, but I don't listen to sports talk radio. Maybe I should. Maybe I should get on the app and listen to these shows, but I don't know who. Well, one thing is I don't like to be influenced by what I come here and say, talk about. I like to have my own thoughts, unlike some people. And I don't know. I guess we can guess who it was, Joe, right? Who the article was mentioning, the radio host that keeps pushing the retirement thing?
No. I don't know.
I don't know either. And we can only guess, right? Because he wasn't mentioned. So, anyway, I think a lot of this is blown out of proportion. I think it's blown out of proportion on purpose. And that's just how I feel about it. There was another article a buddy of mine sent me. I got a buddy of mine who I grew up with in Syracuse. He lives in Virginia Beach too now, ironically. And he sent me an article from Barstool talking about how Syracuse basketball is going to remain irrelevant until Jim Boeheim retires. And the last I checked, you know, I know we're going through, we haven't gone, what, back-to-back? back-to-back, not going to the tournament back-to-back since what? I think it's been like two in the past like 30 years or something like that, two different times. But,
right.
You know, one was 90s and then 80s or something. Or no, I'm sorry, 07, 08. And then, like, I can't remember. It's the 80, 81, 82, something like that. I can't remember. But there was two times. And this article mentions the fact that we're not going to be relevant in basketball until Jim Boeheim retires. He can't recruit. I mean, when was the last time this many freshmen were on the floor? I mean, we got four on the floor at any given time. We got three starting. And I just don't understand where people, especially people like Barstool, they just, I mean, they don't understand what's going on. I don't feel like they have a full grasp of it. But to, you know, so my buddy sends me this article and he's like, oh yeah, every bit of this is legit. And, you know, Boeheim needs to retire. And that's fine. Like, you can have that opinion. The problem is when I disagree with you and you get mad at me about it. And I'm stupid because I disagree. Because I worry about who you get in here at $2 million a year, you know, or in multiple other reasons. But they can have their opinion. But when you say, well, I don't agree with that, that's when people get pissed. And this is a buddy of mine. And then he ends the conversation with, go Boston College. And I'm like, okay, so that's where we're at as a fan base. We're just going to root for the opponent until just to make Jim Boeheim look bad in he retires. I mean, I just don't understand that train of thought, that mentality. And this is why I say Syracuse fans are in a civil war right now with this, because there's lack of diversity of thought, and you're a contrarian or have a contrarian view if you don't want Jim Boeheim fired or retired. And I just feel like, you know, if this is what we're going to spend the season on, you know, people might just get their wish, or you know what? It's just people are just going to get fed up, because all it is bickering, like on Twitter. And I know Twitter's not a real place, but that's all it is bickering back and forth. Yep. So it's draining, to say the least. And the more I stay off Twitter, the better my mental health is anyway. So that's probably what I just need to do.
Yeah. It's always one of those things where, yeah, the fans, they have their right to their opinion, like you said. And, you know, obviously the fans, if they don't like what's going on, then they want to be able to leave their opinion and put the pressure on the athletic director to make a change and everything like that. And I think that this fan base, you know, there's a lot of fan bases that the fans can get. They can get the coaches fired. And I think that a lot of the fans that we have that don't want him, you know, I think that there's even more frustration because they know that, you know, obviously there's a good percentage of Syracuse fans that don't mind him still being our coach. And then they also know that no matter how much pressure they put in social media and everything, like, it doesn't matter. Like, they can't get him fired. So I think that overall, I think like those type of fans, they know they need like every single fan to basically like boycott Jim Boeheim to basically get him out of there. And it's never going to happen. And they know that, you know, they're not in a position to pressure the athletic director to get him fired because it's basically on his own terms. So that can be frustrating is to a fan base for sure.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, last I checked, Syracuse has been doing a pretty good job of recruiting. That was also in that article I mentioned from Barstool. Elijah Moore committed while we were gone, while we were on hiatus.
Yep.
Judah Mintz last year. So it's not for lack of talent that's coming on. It is a lack of experience, I think. And the system, I think, is more difficult. And with the options that we have and the struggles Benny's having, it's just, there's some things that need work, but it's not like we're going out there getting crushed every game either. It's be a totally different ball game, I think, if we're losing by 15, 20 every game. We've gotten crushed a couple times this year, but we've held steady and strong with a couple of really awesome teams and good, you know, tournament teams. And it is a bit frustrating to have to sit here and talk about it, to be honest with you. I'd love to really get into fan feedback, but with all we got going on and getting into this game. I don't know if we're going to get into it right now, but with that said, I think it's time to turn our attention to what Coach said after the game, which wasn't a ton, to be honest with you, but we will talk about it.
You know, I know, you know, Boston College has been playing really, really well. I thought, you know, I mean, Post has really gotten better. He's really difficult to handle. I thought we got good opportunities on offense. We missed some shots early. Joe couldn't get going. Chris missed some. But really, the game came down. Jesse had a big game inside. And I really think that Saimir and Justin Taylor really kept us in the game with his play. And Saimir was really steady. Judah was up and down. He was struggling. And usually when he does that, he has trouble getting going again. But when he finally went back, the last time he had two great passes, one to Jesse, one to Malik. He hit a real big jumper, and he hit his free throws. I just thought he was a completely under control player then, and you know, we're still making mistakes and doing some things that you can't do, but this is a tough place. It's the most fans I've seen here in the last I don't know how many years. It's been a long time, and I thought we had to use the timeouts. We get in these down periods, and we can't seem to pull ourselves out of them. And so every time we took a timeout, we were able to come back and score right away, and that was a difference. You don't like to use them all up, but if you don't use them, you're not going to need them at the end because you're going to be too far behind. But, again, we lose four in a row, and we didn't close a couple that we could have. It's always difficult when the team comes back and takes the lead against you. And we were able to make good plays, really good plays down the stretch.
About him as a freshman to struggle?
Well, the whole thing is he hasn't been able to do that. When he struggled. And the reason I took him out the last time, he didn't run back on defense. You know, I mean, that's a fundamental thing you got to do. And the other time I took him out, he didn't stop Langford. Langford drove the length of the court and made a layup. And he's worrying about something that happened on offense. And you know, you can't make those mistakes. In some games when he struggled like that, he hasn't been able to go back in and play well. He went back in. He made two great passes. And got to the foul line and also hit that little corner jump shot. So, I mean, he really played well down the stretch after struggling during the game. So that's a good thing.
When Jesse's that efficient, 12 of 15, is that a matter of him just maturing, learning where to be, just finding
space? You know, he had a phenomenal game today. He made two or three shots I've never seen him make in practice or in games. So we're happy for that. But I think I would have been happy if he'd have made 9 out of 15 the shots he took. They were hard shots. He made a left-handed hook, a right-handed hook, two. He made 3 or 4 really shots that he hasn't made. But I think he is capable, and I think as he gets stronger and works at things, he has the potential to be a dominant player.
All right, so another somewhat slow start. Cy and Justin come in. They mix things up. They do a tremendous job. I love when Cy comes in and does his thing. It's just another dynamic, and we've said it 100 times, but he put in a solid, 17 minutes yesterday, so last night. And you know, Syracuse missing some early shots, not abnormal, but coach talks about not being able to come back into games when teams fight their way back in it. And there's been a couple instances of that this year, but Syracuse holding their composure, I think they've done that as well this year, pretty good. And, you know, when you look at what they missed against Virginia, which was, you know, that game was theirs to lose, and they did, unfortunately, but they did it 3 for 15. Not much better today, 4 for 14, both of those from behind the arc. But, you know, 21 out of 24 free throws for Syracuse against Boston College was huge. And, you know, kind of the difference, I think, if Syracuse hits a few more of those foul shots against UVA, then obviously that tightens that up, 11 for 18 there. And Syracuse has struggled tremendously from the free throw line. And I think that this is a good sign. Still, obviously, we have to wait for consistency there, but to hit the foul shots is to win the game against Boston College, and they had a lot of them. And for once, the discrepancy went in our favor on the free throws against Boston College. But hey, it is what it is. Jesse played one hell of a game, making shots that he normally doesn't even take, as you heard Coach say. You know, 27 points, and just kept himself out of trouble, dominated, and was able to stick it to Boston College, playing against one of his buddies from back home who he used to play with. So a pretty cool story there, but a game, Joe, that they had to win nonetheless, must win, and we're looking kind of at the same thing against Florida State, but we start with Boston College, had to have it.
It was like a status quo, like Boston College game.
Yeah.
You know, like we're always usually should be better than them, usually are better than them. But for some reason, most of the time we keep it kind of close and then they'll make it a little scary and they end up falling in love with the three. And, you know, we end up taking care of business. It's nice to see us getting back to putting, you know, offense through Jesse Edwards. Looks like Jesse Edwards is kind of through his whatever his mid-year funk was. And yeah, I mean, you can tell that we're getting better in a lot of different areas. And this was just a game that we definitely needed to have.
Coach talked about pulling Judah. And I know there was more, you know, I guess it wasn't really controversy, but questionable. The questionable benching early of Chris Bell during, was the UVA game, right? Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So real quick, he was with Matt Park at Carrabba's, and he explained playing time.
Whoever starts is playing while they stay in longer. You get your playing time when you start, when you come off the bench. By how well you play well, you stay in longer.
You play well, you stay in longer. It's pretty simple. It's pretty simple. You turn the ball over. There's options. You turn the ball. I mean, there was a soft grab from Chris Bell at UVA. And then, you know, Judah struggled a little bit. But I think, you know, I don't want to say for once, but I feel like Judah responded pretty good in this game to getting pulled out. And, you know, you like to see that. And we've said all year, he's going to make mistakes, but it's the experience. He's young. Next year, I think we're going to see a more mature Judah. And obviously, there's no doubt that he's going to be better come next year as well. So those things are going to happen. And thankfully, he's got the options to be able to pull guys and put guys in. So, you know, Malik Brown being able to fill some shoes. And what he get, you know, he didn't have a stellar night last night, but still 37 minutes and 6 rebounds. So 4 assists, still a solid night. And it's kind of what he's out there to do. It's great when he's down low helping, but Jesse didn't need help. He handled it. So
No, he didn't. And then a lot of times I look at Malik Brown, he's had some good games and everything, but a lot of like the Boston College game, him and even you look at Samir and his 17 minutes that he gave, like, the box score, it's not filled, you know what I mean? It's not stuffed. It's not a stuffed stat, you know, like Jesse Edwards or a Mintz or Gerard or something. But anybody that knows, you know, basketball can watch the little things and what people are doing on the other side of it, you know, all the little dirty things, and not dirty, you know what I mean?
Gritty.
Yeah, you're doing all the 50-50
balls,
all the other stuff.
All that
yeah,
stuff.
That kind of stuff. Like, it's you see that. They're not going to show up in the box score, but you see that. And that's pretty much what Malik Brown and Sy's game were yesterday with Boston College. So,
yeah. And we'll take it. And like I said, Sy's a good change of pace. And Justin Taylor, Not bad.
Justin Taylor hit some big threes. He was three for three.
Yeah, he hit two big threes that I remember. I know he hit three, but two of them were big. And, you know, he's just kind of, he's going to come into his own. I think Justin Taylor, if he stays, is going to be a special player. I mean, I'm not trying to beat a dead horse, but we've talked about it. This team, if this team sticks together and comes back next year, they're going to be really freaking good.
Yeah. No, and it's interesting because scouting this Florida State team, we're quite similar. So, you know, once you get to the this preview here, then we'll be able to break that down a little bit and see what's going on. But yeah, we've seen the talent, and we know that everyone can come back, which is why we don't ever recruit in the 2023 class. So, only time will tell as far as that goes. But this year's not over yet.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the path narrows, but, you know, it's one of those things that we still don't know exactly what's going to happen. And, you know, I mean, I don't expect to make the tournament this year. I really don't. But anything could still happen. And ain't going to stop me.
Not mathematically out yet.
Right. And until then I'll keep my hopes alive. But one thing I'm not going to do is root for the opponent because I want the coach to look bad.
Yeah, definitely not. Because at the end of the day, if you haven't figured it out, guys, the you know, Boeheim haters out there, doesn't matter. He had his worst season last year under 500. He's still going to come back. There's reasons for that. He's going out on his own terms. So you're wasting your breath. You're wasting your air cheering for the opponent. So.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, look, I'm a cynic sports fan myself. I really am, it's just not like that with me with Syracuse for some reason. But, like, you know, NFL, absolutely. I'm totally cynical. I say some cynical things for, you know, in college sports having to do with Syracuse. But at the end of the day, I mean, I've always just kept hope alive, regardless of how pissed off I get. Let's see. Let's go to Facebook real quick. Jake says, so fun watching Judah and Joe play hero ball. Have any of these players improved? Maybe Jesse, but I say that's more from being on the international team. Has this coaching staff developed and made any of these players better? Is there any indication these players are learning from mistakes? Well, there's really only one other player that you can look to say is either improved or not improved from last year, and that would be Joe. And I would say that absolutely Joe's improved this year. I think he's more comfortable where he's playing and how he's playing and having Judah there. So, I mean, obviously Jesse, but there's really no other players that are getting a substantial amount of time for even to make that comment, I don't think. But
I mean, realistically, if they can't see that this team isn't getting better, then they're blind.
Well, that's the cynic. That's the cynical fan. And I mean, like, I get it. I really do. But
this team is a better team than what it was in the beginning of the year versus Colgate and Bryant. And come on.
Oh, Nadal steps in. He says, I watch Boeheim improve players year after year. We usually just play harder ACC slate at the end, which is true. I mean, the ACC slate, I think, is hard anyway. And, you know, You can't say Judah's playing hero ball. I mean, there's been some instances that are questionable, but he's just trying to do what he can to win. And let's be honest, like, you can make an argument for Jesse, but other than that, as far as ball handling goes, he's the best ball handler on the court. So when you talk about playing some hero ball or having to dribble around something and make something happen out of nothing, then, yeah, I mean, that's what he's going to do. That's called playing sports, too. I mean, we've seen hero ball. That we've seen Joe actually do that. Something I would consider hero ball. We've seen that. I don't think Judah's really doing that. Not enough. Not on a consistent enough basis to make it a point. Let's see. Dave, top fan on Facebook. Needed to get off the Schneid. Mission accomplished. Yeah, I mean, look, another road game coming up, and you know you have to break the losing streak. So we had a 3-game losing streak earlier in the year in non-conference play. We have this one here. And, you know, with the slate ahead, got some more tough games coming up at Florida State, NC State, Duke, and at Clemson, and then at Pitt. And, you know, it's going to be, it doesn't get any easier. So we got to get the ones you need, and we needed that one, and we got it. So that's that. Brandon on Facebook, top fan. The norm at this point, beat bad teams, struggle against mediocre teams, and lose to good teams. That's the expectation at this point of Jim's coaching career. Well, we're beating the ones we should beat. And we're not beating the ones we need to beat to make a difference. So I understand that. I understand that. It's frustrating. You know, when you look at Joe UNC and thinking, man, should have had that game. And then you're up on Virginia with very little time left and you end up losing by five. It sucks. It's demoralizing, but, you know, you think about, man, if we could have had those two games, if ifs and buts were candy and nuts, we all have a Merry Christmas. But that's one of those things that, you look back on recently, obviously, is those two games, and especially the UNC game. UNC's not ranked, but that was still going to be a quad one game. So,
yeah,
you know, I mean, I don't know what else to say about it. We need one. We're 0-5 in quad one games.
That was Virginia.
What's that? Yeah,
Virginia was a quad one game too.
Yeah, it was. So I think the quad two game that we've got as a win is Virginia Tech, is it not? I think it might be, even though that was a home game. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Let's go to Nadal. We heard Nadal's response to Jake. Let's go with Nadal. Top commentator, Nadal. That's a new one. I didn't even know that was a thing. Justin Taylor, absolutely massive. 9 points off the bench, nailing all of his 3 points attempts. Without him, we would have shot 1 for 11, 9% from beyond the arc. Swider or Buddy Boeheim would have been so good on this year's team. I wanted Swider back bad. I did. I wanted Swider back bad. I thought that would have been fantastic. To have Swider back. And I don't even know what Swider's doing. Hell, I don't even know what the hell Buddy's doing right now. So, they both in the G League?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So, anyways, let's see if we can hit a couple up from the crap show that is Twitter real quick and see if anyone has anything intelligent to say. Let's see. Here it is. Come on. At Baptized by Fire, I thought they were going to sweep the leg there for a minute, but we ended up giving them a crane kick to the chin. Yes. At NY Sox Fan 79, excellent win. Great to see them close out a game. And yeah, it looked like for a minute there, it was not going. I think there was an inbounds pass that was stolen, and then a three was nailed. And you're just thinking to yourself, please, Lord, no. Please don't let this happen. Okay. Because I can't handle it. And I was watching, I had to watch the condensed version of this game too. I was in a bar, I could see it, but I couldn't hear it. So I wasn't really sure exactly what was going on. But at Oil Cuse, refs were decent for a change. Jesse was amazing with 27 points. Still need Benny to contribute more. Yeah, the Benny thing, man. I don't know, Joe. What do you got to say about the Benny thing? Really, when it comes to when you boil it down, this point in the season, you expect Benny to be better, right? Coach said he talked to Benny's dad, and that's when this personal day thing came up. He wasn't. No one's happy when they lose their job, and he was upset. And I think there was a mutual agreement to from what I gather to take the time. But you know, he comes into this game against Boston College. He plays 7 minutes, 2 points. Doesn't, you know, just that's really it. He got a shot in an and one, missed the free throw, and that was pretty much it for 7 minutes.
I mean, it's like I said, he's a sophomore. Malik Brown's a
freshman,
and you know, he took his spot. So I don't know what that looks like for the future and into next year. That doesn't mean that he can't come back and win his spot, you know, and try hard and during the offseason to get better. And become more consistent. So hopefully I'm just looking for really how he's going to respond for the rest of the year, because he can still carve a little role in some minutes out on this team to help them win and move forward. So really what I'm watching moving forward is, you know, is Malik going to still continue to try as hard and hope that he doesn't actually kind of, I don't want to say stop trying, but sometimes, you know, get complacent because he's got the starting job now. And then, you know, is Benny going to go out and take it? Or is Benny just not going to be a good teammate and just kind of go out there and, you know, kind of play through the motions throughout the rest of the season? That's really, really what you got to look at. And, you know, I'm hoping that he's not going to go through the motions, that he's going to still try hard to go in and possibly win his job back, or at least try to, you know, come off the bench like Samir does and Quetier and how Malik did in the beginning. And that's really what I'm going to look at. I don't want to speculate. Obviously, we know what the options in the offseason and everything can be. But we've also seen players just put themselves in the transfer portal in the middle of the season, which, again, that wouldn't make too much sense because he's still going to, you know, lose. I mean, this year's eligibility is gone, so you might as well play it out. So just something to pay attention to, something to watch. You don't want it to turn into any type of bad locker room, bad karma thing going on, you know. So it'll be interesting to see, but hopefully, like I said, he took the high road last year, and I perfectly, you know, expect him to do that this year as well. And yeah, just do his best to get through the season and be a teammate off the bench, even though that wasn't supposed to be his role.
Yeah, well, it's his role now. I mean, and Coach said that, you know, it's in so many words, it's not rocket science. He just hasn't been as good as Malik. And I think we all see that, right? I mean, that's not a controversial thing to say, right? I mean, it's pretty obvious.
I wouldn't think so.
And I mean, I love Benny. I hope Benny stays. I hope he develops. But, you know, for where we are in the season, for where he is in his time at SU, I just feel like he's way behind the curve. And that's really what it comes down to. And it's really all, it's the only analysis I have on it. And I like Benny a lot. Liked him a lot last year, but we kind of saw it last year. We just expected a little bit more and just not getting it. So, all right. FSU Wednesday at 7 o'clock. Okay. So, a unique day there for that. And then, it's about a week off in between that and NC State. So no game Saturday. The all-time series between Syracuse and Florida State sits at 9-6 in favor of the Orange. The two teams played three times last year. The Orange going 2-1 in those games, a 63-60 win on the road, and then a 76-71 loss at home. Then the 96-57 infamous win in the ACC tournament. Gerard, Buddy, Sidibe, Swider, and Jimmy starting five for that game. This would be Buddy Boeheim's last game as an Orangeman. Swider with 28 points, 13 rebounds, and Anselm with 15 rebounds. The Syracuse Orange and Florida State Seminoles first met in 1990. The Orange won the first three games in the series. The Seminoles would beat Syracuse in the first round of the NIT in 1997. The two teams would not meet again for 17 years until the Syracuse Orangemen joined the ACC in 2013-14 season. All that from orangehoops.org. The Seminoles right now sit at 8-16, 6-7 in the ACC. FSU, through their first 13 games, went 3-10. All right, they started out 1-9, with the only win in that span of the 1-9 coming from Mercer at home, 81-72. They just barely beat the 3-20 Louisville Cardinals last night, 81-78. As far as players go, so it's kind of a weird matchup, and some guys I don't remember. Matthew Cleveland being one of them, 6'7" sophomore guard. He's leading the team in scoring with 14 points a game, and there's Darren Green right behind him with 14 points a game. Green's a fourth year guy, transferred from UCF after 3 years there. He throws up a ton of threes. 177 on the season so far. He hit 72 of them so far this season. It's good enough for 40.7%, which is, that's hefty, dude. That's really hefty. They've been starting four guards, their tallest of which is 6'7", that being Matthew Cleveland, who I just mentioned. Nyheim McLeod is 7'4 center coming off the bench. He is averaging 18 minutes a game, though, so expect to see plenty of him. He's averaging 3.5 rebounds a game, 5 points a game, and 2 blocks. The Seminoles are averaging 70 points a game, shooting 44% from the floor, 35% from 3, and 72.5% from the line. FSU is currently 209th in the net rankings, making this a quad 3 game on the road. So it goes without saying that this is a must-win for Syracuse on the road. Can't afford to lose this game if we want to keep tournament hopes alive in the postseason. A couple things real quick. Darren Green, 72 of 177 shots made from behind the arc. That's, they call it 41%. That's huge. And what we're used to as Syracuse fans is when you stop a guy like Green, then there's the potential of someone else filling that role that you're not used to. And that creates another problem. So that's the big glaring issue for me. I know that, you know, McLeod is kind of green, but I do also worry about Jesse Edwards putting himself into situations where he gets a couple early fouls. And with that said, that's no good for Syracuse. Just look at how we got by Boston College. It wouldn't have been done probably without the game that Jesse had.
Yeah. Yes. But you know, Florida State, they do have, some height as well. Let me just get to where I wanted to get. So realistically, Florida State, you know, they're a very, very similar team to us. And this was one of the things that I was interested in talking about and everything. But when you look at their team coming in, they had Jalen Worley, who was a sophomore who we remember from last year. Matthew Cleveland, sophomore from, I remember from last year. Nyheim McLeod, he was, I know that I remember him being on the bench, but not playing that much, but I know he's a sophomore as well. So you had those three, and then Caleb Mills, the guard there that they had that was a transfer from Houston last year. He killed us in some games too. He can hit some threes as well. They were like the only guys. And I mean, I likened it to kind of our situation. Like McLeod played about as much as John Bull. And then they had Matthew Cleveland, Jalen Worley, and Caleb Mills. Cleveland and Caleb Mills, they played a lot, just like Joe and Jesse. And then you had Worley, who played a little bit, just like Benny. So they're really only returning very, very few players that had some type of, you know, contributions last year. Then when you look at their recruiting class, Florida State had a 15th best recruiting class. They had 6 freshmen and 2 transfers that came in, one of which was Darren Green. The other one, Jalen Gainey, he was a transfer from Brown. He tore his ACL. So they're dealing with a lot of new players as well. The other thing that hurt them as well is they did have a player, Cameron Fletcher, who played last year as well, and he got hurt a little bit, I think in December, and tore his ACL as well. So they've had some injuries, and they're dealing with 6 freshmen in a transfer that's trying to help out, you know, a very small core group of players that came back. So our makeup of our teams are pretty, pretty close to, you know, how we've had to navigate through the season. And, you know, I know Syracuse fans are upset, but, you know, we could be in the boat that Florida State is. Now, Florida State's played a little bit better in ACC play as the season's gone on. But they're 8-16 overall. So it's been rough for them. It's been rough for some other teams. And, yeah, I mean, they have some height. They have a couple guys that shoot some threes, and their defense really isn't that great. They give up a lot of points. When you look at their schedule and the teams that they have beat in the ACC, you know, they have 6 wins, but 4 of them are against what? Louisville. They beat Louisville twice. They beat Notre Dame twice. Georgia Tech. So their big win at Pitt was their big win. So they've beaten. They've got a quad 1 win. As funny as that is, they're 8-16. They're 6-7 in the ACC. And they have a quad 1 win, and we don't. But needless to say, their height is inexperienced. They have issues rebounding and have it had issues rebounding, which is why they've gone to the lower, smaller teams. So, I mean, I really don't know what to expect. It's a game that we need to win. And this is a team that's getting better. And you know that they have some guys that can play. Matthew Cleveland can play. Caleb Mills has hit some big shots against our three. And that other guy, Darren Green, he's just shot a crap ton.
Yeah, 177. I mean, that's a lot.
Yeah, 177 threes is a ridiculous amount of threes.
Yeah, he's hitting over 40%. That's even more ridiculous. I mean, you shoot that many and you're still hitting 40% plus. That's dangerous.
That's seven a game.
That's a lot, man. So that's my biggest worry. And I mean, I don't know about McLeod, how he can disrupt Jesse, but at 7'4", you got to imagine.
He's raw, man. He's raw.
Yeah, I know. He doesn't have a ton of skill. He's more like what do we used to call Chukwu? And it's like, looks like a baby horse coming out of the womb. You know what I'm saying? He's just got to get his legs under him and type thing. And it's kind of the same type of situation. What I worry about though is just disruption as far as, you know, bad fouls put Jesse, like bad fouls yesterday against Jesse would have lost us the game. Now, for once, the free throw discrepancy, was in our favor last night. You know, I think, where was it? Boston College only got to the line four times to our, 24. So, for once that worked out in our favor, but that's not very often. And had Jesse gotten in trouble last night, we would not have won. I mean, it would have been very tough to win that game. Let's put it that way. So,
oh, absolutely. So, I mean, this team's really been riding with guards all year. I know they got a Baba Miller is a freshman with some size and some skill. I mean, they had four stars in this line and they're in this recruiting class. So he was suspended all the way to the middle of January. So he's another big guy freshman that is just he's only played seven games. So other than that, you're looking at a team with Matthew Cleveland, Darren Green, Caleb Mills and Jalen Worley, which is four guards. And then freshman Cam Corhin, who's a 6'10" freshman. Forward who they've been running with. So again, they'll put in they'll start Cam, they'll put in Naheem, they'll put in Baba, and there's going to be some height there, but it's very inexperienced, and I highly doubt that they're going to be able to stop Jesse offensively. And it's just really a lot of times it's Jesse stopping himself, which is like you said, getting in foul trouble. So
yeah, so with that said, Joe, it's been a minute since we've done this. It's been quite the minute, actually, since January 25th, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's time to pick our picks for Syracuse at Florida State. Now, Syracuse has got to win this game. Therefore, I'm going to pick them to win this game. And I think they can. I think Florida State is, like you said, Joe, they got a lot of talent and they just haven't put the piece together. And it's a great point that you made that, you know, with the similarities between the two teams, that Syracuse is actually ahead of the curve on getting some of their stuff put together. But they also do have some core senior guys that have been huge this year, and Jesse and Joe. Okay.
Yeah, it's a little different in that aspect.
Right. So with that said, Jesse and Joe have big games. I think we cruise to victory. Not an easy place to play. Going on the road again, too. Went to Boston College, not a huge trip, but going down to Tallahassee after a couple days off. And got to have this one going into about a six-day break before NC State, which will be at home in the Dome. So, and then home against Duke. So they got to have it. Therefore, I'm going to keep my hopes alive. It's not quite the 8-2 that our buddy David from the Green Room would have liked that we talked about after the Carolina game or Georgia Tech game, one of the two. But anyway, I don't think, obviously, we can't get there anymore, but we can do what we need to do and maybe pluck off a Clemson, a Pitt, or a Duke, or all three. I doubt it, but if
NC
you get...
NC State? An NC State?
What did I say?
Oh, I don't know. I was just adding...
Oh, yeah, NC State, too. Well, yeah, we got to have NC State, too. Yes, there's four good ones coming up, but the big ones, Duke, Clemson, Pitt. You know, you'd like to get a Duke or a Clemson in there. And, of course,
hey,
Pitt's a given because that's at Pitt, and that's going to be a quality win regardless. So, what were you going to say?
Other than Florida State and Georgia Tech, the rest of our games are
tough.
Teams that are ahead of us in the conference standings.
Yeah. So, with that said, all right. I'm going to go. Man, it's a tough call, honestly. The score's tough. I'm going to go 72-67 Syracuse. Joe,
wow.
Joe finally gets off, you know, the little bit of the slump that he's been in. He's had a couple tough games, and he gets off and gets back to his mid-season self.
See, this game kind of scares me a little bit because in some ways I can see like this team having the people to, because if I can remember last year, I feel like I remember Matthew Cleveland playing the middle of the zone. He was either playing the middle of the zone or the baseline and getting dunks. And like I said, Caleb Mills has shot threes, and we know like this Darren Green guy can shoot, so he's going to get shots off. You know that. But then that tells me we're going to try to keep, obviously, them from stopping to shoot the threes. So maybe we'll force it down low, make them make plays, make a young team that hasn't played against the zone this year or yet play against it. I don't know what it's going to look like. That's really what scares me more than anything. So I'm going to go close to what you had, but I'm going to go, man. For some reason, I just feel like they're going to fall in love with the three, and their big guys really aren't going to be able to figure it out. Maybe some foul trouble with some key players. Give me Syracuse 75, Florida State 65.
75-65. Okay, fair enough. Got to have it. It's a quad three game.
No, we do.
Got to have it. We're not great in the net right now. I think we are what?
Not awful.
It's not awful. 97? It's not great. It's not awful, but it's, you know, we're 5-2 in quad three games, and we're 8-0 in quad four, thank God. But the 5-2, you know, you've got to that can't start to slip. So, and we'll just have to see. It's the only gauge we have, so we use it. It's not perfect, but it's not terrible. So, all right. I think that's going to be it. Now, I could make this a whole lot longer, but I think we're good for today. Getting our feet back wet after some time off. And we will be back here on Thursday after Syracuse beats Florida State. Thank all of you for tuning in. Thank all of you for your concern via DM and whatnot. Appreciate all you guys. Thanks, David, hanging out in the green room here. Get on that, everybody else. For Joe, I'm Sean. We're out.